Earlier this morning, I caught up with Patrick Meyer, who is a crisis mapper and digital humanitarian, and I began by asking him about his website, iRevolution.
Sure. So iRevolution.net is my professional blog where I share some of the findings that we are seeing coming out of our applied humanitarian technology and crisis computing, and also highlight other related projects that colleagues around the world are doing in this space.
And how did iRevolution and crisis mapping evolve to what we see today?
It came about around 5 years ago when I was still in grad school doing my PhD, and some colleagues and I were looking to start a blog. And I then sort of branched out and also started my own blog based on this experience, realizing that I was finding the exercise of blogging really rewarding and helping me to connect with new people and new ideas. And then it just caught on, and it's been really core to what I've been doing over the past 5 years. It's been an incredible source of new information, with feedback, connecting, as I mentioned, with different groups and individuals, and even leading to joint projects, which has been really exciting, based on a blog post. So it's a great way to bounce off new ideas.
And I would take as well, there's a lot of challenges as well with the advancements of technology, restrictions, policies, laws as well, that would kind of, I guess, maybe perhaps either influence or create challenges for crisis mapping.
Yes, that's true. Things have definitely changed. Some of the challenges we were facing 4 or 5 years ago, I have been overcome in some respects, and new ones have materialized. So as we've found workarounds or temporary workarounds to certain challenges in the humanitarian technology space and digital humanitarian response, new ones have arisen. So my focus has certainly evolved with these challenges and new horizons.
And I guess with crisis mapping and new data, new technology, and I guess kind of crowdsourcing data as well, it is just a new way of reading maps in the context of, well, as before we used to look at cartography and maps to read and to navigate our ways, and to crisis mapping really is just another way of reading data.
So crisis mapping really is nothing new in certain respects. Maps have always been used for disaster response, I mean, for decades and decades, to help inform sort of the damage impact across a particular city, to then basically prioritize response and so on. So the difference, however, is that while these crisis maps in the past have been static, they've been paper-based maps, posters, you know, taped on a wall at a UN office in a disaster-affected country like Haiti, today we have live maps. We can create these maps in real time thanks to social media, for example, or SMS. So these maps now really reflect needs and damage that's been reported closer to real time. And that's really important because we know that disasters are not static, that disasters result in various different needs that change over time, from, you know, the immediate search and rescue phase to the post-disaster reconstruction phase. So these live crisis maps really help us track needs, damage assessments, and a lot more as well.
And it takes an incredible task as well to actually decipher all the information that's coming through, or all the data, whether it be from a Facebook account or Twitter, emails, location services like Foursquare, for example. It must take a lot of effort and a lot of challenges to read the data correctly as well.
That's been part of the challenge. You know, when we started this, say 5 years ago, we could, with a few hundred volunteers, manually manage this information. But with just the explosion of social media user-generated content around the world, that is no longer sort of a viable answer on its own. These volunteers have been doing this manually, and what we need to do is develop what I call next generation humanitarian technologies to help us go through this vast amount of information that tends to get generated now during disasters. So we're looking at advanced computing solutions to help complement sort of what the volunteers are doing, digital humanitarian volunteers, that is.
And I take that it's quite important as well to have a good working relationship with organizations who are working on the ground, whether they be in conflict areas or areas where a natural disaster has happened.
Yes, absolutely. So we have a number of partnerships with established humanitarian and disaster response emergency management organizations. One of them at the international level is the Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs at the United Nations. The acronym is OCHA, O-C-H-A. We are collaborating with them on developing these next-generation platforms to automatically identify these sort of life-saving pieces of information on Twitter, for example, that get posted there. And we know they do get posted. We've done some research over the past year or two looking at various Twitter data sets during disasters and seeing that a non-insignificant percentage of these tweets, for example, really have informative, valuable information for disaster responders. And on the national domestic front, we are in the U.S. at least, we're working with the American Red Cross on supporting their efforts. So during the recent tornadoes in Oklahoma, Category 5 tornado that happened, we were using our platform and our technology to automatically identify needs being communicated on Twitter, as well as offers of help. We see hundreds of people offering help, wanting to find ways to help those affected. So we were using our platforms that use artificial intelligence to automatically identify this information and then share that immediately with our colleagues at the Red Cross.
And it must be very exciting as well as that you are a National Geographic explorer and having your work with crisis mapping and digital humanitarianism. It must be very exciting and very rewarding as well, I guess, coming from new technology and also working with an established and very respected organization such as the National Geographic.
It really is. National Geographic has been around for 125 years. This year, they just celebrated their anniversary, and they are really looking at new forms of collaboration and exploration in this kind of area. So, this idea of looking at how digital technologies can aid this kind of collaboration is something they've been looking at in some various of projects that they've been engaged in. And one of them happens to be the digital exploration that happens and the digital response that happens during disasters. This idea of sensing and shaping how disasters unfold to provide response is definitely a new area. And it's great to see them being so forward-thinking in this respect as well. So that's been very exciting to be tied with the National Geographic team and the other fellows who are also using technologies in very interesting ways and ways that I think have applicability in the disaster response space. So it's really about exploring our world, you know, the beauty of our world during peacetime and during non-disasters, but also exploring our world when things are stressed with climate change, disasters, and other events, and seeing how digital technology can help in that respect.
And would it be fair to say that a lot of the information or data that is coming across, that you would come across in your work from the communities who are directly affected by a crisis or a natural disaster, that it would actually only strengthen the cause that communities, when threatened or when in crisis, that they actually do come together and that could have a very strong bond both at that present time within the natural disaster, but also that could form ties, form bonds, and strengthen a community after that disaster.
I completely agree, and that's been another area that I've been fascinated about, is this idea, I think in the academic literature, they're calling it social capital. These sort of social bonds that get formed at the community level tend to be reinforced during disasters, and we see this time and time again. And that collective action can also be applied, you know, during non-disasters as well, on public health issues and what have you. So it's interesting to see this happen over and over. And I was just talking with communities who were affected by Hurricane Sandy and who were in New York, who were out of electricity and cell phone coverage for 4 weeks. And they kept on going back to this idea of, you know, it's because we had a tight community, a local social fabric, that this kind of self-help and mutual aid really sprung to the surface.
Unfortunately, that's where we're going to have to leave it. But I'd like to thank our guest, Patrick Meyer from iRevolution. Those sites, Crisis Mappers, is crisismappers.net, and iRevolution is iRevolution.net also.